This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Hey, I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the St. Jude kids. St. Jude's doing incredible work fighting childhood cancer. And because of donations like the ones that you give, families never receive a bill ever from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, food, none of that. Help St. Jude stop childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope. Get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. It's going to look great on you. So join all the doctors, researchers, and me in this fight. All right, text the word Bobby. It's only 6 numbers to 785-833. Again, text the word Bobby to just these 6 numbers, 785-833.
I'm not like longing for that all the time. It's just something that occupies some thought. So, you know, that and hunting for me is really it. So I can see where a girl would take that place a little bit and make it where you wouldn't mind being off the road so much.
Episode 438 with Riley Green. We mentioned this, but for a long time, his name to me was Riley Duckman. Mm-hmm. Not even Riley Duckman, which is how that name started because he's a big duck hunter. But we'd talk about it and be like, oh, Riley Duckman. We get to that later. And I mean, this is the most Riley and I have ever like talked as like normal dudes.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a great example of why it's almost better to do interviews in this format. Yes. Because when he comes in here, it's so hard to get things out of him so quickly. This was great.
I mean, 8, 9, 10 minutes, and he's playing songs on the radio show. So that's tough. This, he even addresses, this is kind of like therapy.
Yeah.
I talk about it later. But, you know, Riley and I've done the radio show. Riley and I bailed me out of it, a charity event where I was performing. Eddie and I were with Jordan Davis, and Jordan wasn't able to come real quick. So I called Riley, and Riley went with us to do the show. And so it was super cool of him to do that. We didn't even talk about that. Because I mean, I felt like we could have gone a long time. We did over an hour, but I like Riley. I just hadn't been able to really connect with him, but I do feel now like I know him a lot better. Don't you?
Yeah, I do too.
His new album, Ain't My Last Rodeo, is now out. He just kicked off his Ain't My Last Rodeo tour, February 22nd, which is, I think, last Thursday. Tracy Lawrence and Ella Langley out on tour with him. And we talk about the Buford Bond Charitable Fund, which he has, which is inspired by his grandfather's. He just had a number one again. We talk about his Duckman Jam at Florabama. And so, you know, Riley Green, we can't play clips, right?
We can't.
Okay. Well, his songs are like, there was this girl. And there was that. I can sing them though, right?
Yeah, you can sing them.
All right. And then half of me wants a cold beer. I don't know if that's how it goes,
that's
a number one. And then I wish grandpa's never died. Rest in peace, grandpa. I don't know if he says that, but that's that song. And then his number one that just happened was Different Round Here with Luke Combs. How's that one go? I just sang three, so I can't get them.
I'm stuck on the other one, grandpa one.
I'm stuck on half of me wants a dip.
They all have beer in them.
Oh. All right, well, here we go. This is Riley Green. Follow him at Riley Duckman, at Riley Duckman. Enjoy.
Riley, good to see you, buddy.
Yeah, man.
Were you a wrestling guy?
My mom wouldn't let me watch wrestling.
Ever?
No, like I had to hear about it from my buddies. The closest I got was, I think, Sega or Nintendo 64 or something. Had some
like playing it.
Yeah, that was it. But if my mom ever found out about that, I'd probably been in trouble too.
I was a wrestling guy, but growing up in the South, and it was just on like TBS and TNT. I just watched the movie The Iron Claw, which is out, and like Zac Efron just got ripped for it.
But so I saw that, yeah.
You watched the movie?
Yet I saw it's his physique awesome. For it. Is it good?
Yeah, it's really, because it's a true story of like a family in wrestling. And it was a little before like my time, but some of those guys in it, I just assumed if you were from the South, and but your mom wouldn't let you, why?
Well, it was certainly was from the South. It was very popular. I had a bunch of buddies that watched it, and I heard about it every day at school. But I watched 30 for 30 on maybe it was Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Man, the stuff those guys went through.
Yeah. It makes you guys touring.
It really does. Like, I feel like such a sissy whenever I look at that, especially like, I mean, you know, I had some years of what I would call, I thought, partying a little bit, but nothing like that.
And having to keep themselves going through any means possible. And some of that was partying, but I mean, the partying turned into how do we keep our energy? How do we keep, even with the drugs they were doing to keep their bodies in shape?
Well, the level of show that they had to put on every night, even versus what we have to do, is like, I wouldn't want that job. That's insane.
You ever get sick and then have to call, and I've done this a couple times where you have to call, find a minute clinic and get them to shoot you up as a steroid just so you can get through the night?
Yeah, I mean, I lost 18 pounds last week with the flu. And I'm like one of those where I don't get sick often. If I do,
Wait, hold on. I need that flu then.
Well, I was trying to like...
That sounds like a...
I was trying to put on some weight.
I've never heard of 18... Like,
I broke a fever. This is no exaggeration. I've never had this kind of sick. I laid in the bed and just sweated for 24 hours. Like, I would get up, shower, get back. I had to change beds, change blankets. Like, it was insanity. But I was like 208 or something the morning I started feeling sick. I got in the bed. When I got up and weighed again, I was like 189.
Sounds like you beat Ebola more than it was the flu. Maybe. God dang.
Well, I'm lucky to be here. I feel that way.
Did anybody else in your crew get the flu, or were you the only one?
Yeah, Josh gave it to me. He's here.
Yeah, I mean, it always, it's, and Josh, you didn't create it.
No, he did.
I'm not saying you sat in a lab, Josh, and created the flu, right? Like, we all get it.
I will tell you the type of friend Josh is. Josh went to high school with me, elementary school. He's on the road with me now. Comes up, goes on the road with me, gives me the flu. I would have never told me that, you know? He was like, hey, man, sorry I got you sick. I was like, wait, what?
Would you have known?
I was horribly sick before I left Jacksonville, Alabama, to come up.
Josh, how long have you been here?
A couple months.
Oh, he's new.
Yeah, he doesn't know what he's doing.
Oh, yeah, we don't do flu up here. If we have flu, we try to keep away from people.
I
don't know Alabama, because Alabama's like, I got the flu, I need to go get my cousin, because I'm from Arkansas. We used to do that, too.
What's fun about having somebody that's very removed from this industry come into it is Josh always been around me playing music, but, like, I get to literally teach him lessons like that. Like, hey, listen, I got verbatim said, hey, just so you know, if you're sick, just don't come, you know? And he's like, oh, yeah.
Because it'll then, he knows this, everybody knows this, because then it slowly spreads, even if it doesn't get to you.
COVID days, you know, and you know, like, even if you weren't feeling bad, it wasn't that. I was out with Dirks when we finally started back, you know, and there was all those protocols and testing to get backstage and everything. Was, if somebody got it, you might have to cancel the whole livelihood.
Yeah.
A lot of people's livelihood. A
lot of responsibility. And I felt that. I was doing a show for Nat Geo and we were traveling around the country, but if I got it, the whole crew couldn't work. So that's paychecks. And so, and if one of the crew guys, like camera guys or audio guys, got it, we could just make do.
Yeah, you could move somebody around.
But if it's you, or if it's me, the whole crew got shut down. So there was a different kind of responsibility. Did you miss any shows because of the flu?
I didn't. No, it was a good timing, if there is such a thing. It was after a weekend run of shows. I got some fluids. Somebody came over and gave me some fluids. I got over it pretty quickly, but yeah, that rock doc will save your life on the road. Somebody come by and...
For a while, I was traveling so much, either shooting or just doing stand-up on the road, that I was like, I got to find a way, because doctors are a little weird about prescribing things if they're your doctor and your... So I have a like a concierge doctor now. And so I can call him anytime.
Yeah.
And I can get whatever I want, like crack, weed. It's
funny that it takes, like, rise to being in country music of some level, where something like that was available to me, was very gradual. So I can remember, like, even in the last couple of years, like, struggling with calling my, like, old primary care doctor back in Alabama, trying to get a prescription sent, and they can't do it across state lines. I'm running from five different Walgreens to other. And then I realized, wait a second, you can just call this guy and he'll just show up with some stuff. Okay, yeah, we'll do that.
I did, I won't say what, but they had a doctor that was kind of a wink wink doctor, meaning if you were hurt, if you were injured, the wink wink doctor would come and just go, what do you think you need?
Yeah.
And you would get what you thought you needed. And it was just kind of the understanding. Where I have friends that are athletes, that don't have wink wink doctors. I made that term up too. It's pretty cool. Wink wink doctor.
Yeah, but I thought it was a real term.
But they have a doctor that their goal is to, if you're not going to hurt it further, which maybe always may not be the right idea either. But
yeah, I guess
when it's your livelihood though, and it's your job.
Well, yeah. And I mean, you know, this is different than going and playing a football game or something. Like, yeah, you can strain your voice to a point where I guess you could have to have some kind of surgery or something. But for me, it literally is just when you get in that type of shape, you just got to get through it, you know.
Do you ever have injuries, like old athletic injuries that creep up on you now that inhibit you at all?
Seems like it just started about when I turned 35. Yeah, it's – I try to work out on the road, just stay busy. It's hard to eat right on the road, you know, and as you get a little older, you got to figure out ways to stay in some kind of shape. And my thing's like waking up in a different bed, whether it be the bus or a hotel or, you know, home in Alabama or home here, sleeping on different type mattresses is like, I'm an old person now. Like, it just kills me.
How often are you in Alabama versus in Nashville, percentage-wise?
Well, when we get busy touring, you know, like, if I'm off Sunday through Wednesday, let's say not on the road, I'd usually go home, you know, like something like this in town, or I had a riot yesterday. What I do is try to schedule all my stuff to where I can kind of knock it all out in a week and then go spend a couple of weeks home a month.
Can you write on the road effectively, or when you're on the road, is it so much, it's just stimulus everywhere that you can't really sit down and focus?
It's tough. I've never been really good at it. I have taken some writers out on the road, written some songs that ended up getting cut, but I think I write best when I'm either just have an idea I'm passionate about. Something hits me and I like, then I want to sit and write it that day. Or if I'm just kind of, if I ever have a chance to get bored, you know, like if I'm at home.
We were talking about that today.
And I walk by a guitar and pick it up and want to play it, that's when I'll write. You know, when you're on the road, you're kind of like, you don't really want to look at your guitar again until it's time to get on stage, you know.
Being bored is a very undervalued thing once you haven't been bored in a while.
I haven't been bored in a long time. Yeah. It's, yeah, you can tell too. I think Christmas break, I wrote more than I did, you know, the majority of the year last year.
I used to feel like if I was bored, that meant that nobody really required my services anymore. And I would start to look at it as maybe I'm not in demand or I'm kind of losing my edge. But now I just have run so busy at times when I wasn't even really being effective. But now when I'm bored, I mean, it's like, you know, you ever, like for me, it's in the shower. I get great thoughts. I feel like they're great thoughts in the shower. I'm like, oh, because all inhibitions are done. But when I'm bored, like I get really, it feels like fresh
like
ideas.
Creative, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought, well, you go get in a tree for a few hours, you know?
I'm too cold.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know that you couldn't have dogs in Tennessee until like last week, because we had dogs.
Yeah.
We had tons of dogs. We'd run dogs like crazy. And
See, that's a little more exciting too, though.
That was fun.
Yeah.
That's my kind. And also, I had to learn how to drive at like 12, because if they're tracking the dogs, and he's like, hey, you need to go meet us over down here. So I'm 12.
And you had to know your way around, too.
Yeah, I'm 12. You know, driving down through the back roads. But I didn't know dogs in Tennessee weren't allowed.
Yeah. Yeah, and they've gotten real strict on dog seasons in a lot of states, Alabama including. Like, you have, like, the last couple weeks of the season or something like that. But for me, like, even not actually being in the woods hunting, but, like, when I, you know, November hits and rut's on, or, you know, duck season, whatever it is, I'll go off somewhere, be by myself for a week. You know, like go up to Kansas. I got a little house up there on some property. And like, I remember going to Kansas hunting for, I think, 5 days, and I didn't talk to another human.
You went by yourself completely.
I mean, I always do. I mean, you know, Josh goes home and the band, they go do their thing. And I don't take anybody on the road with me. And that's probably where I get most of my creative work done.
Do you know, and I'm sure you know him, but do you know him in any close way? Craig Morgan?
Yeah. Craig's great, man.
He's awesome. Except now he's like, you got to come to Alaska. And I'm like, I've never been to Alaska anyway. It's like two states I haven't been to. He's like, you got to come to Alaska. And I'm like, ah. And he knows I grew up, I don't anymore because I'm a wimp, but I grew up hunting and fishing my whole life, right? Until like 18. It's all we did. It was a culture.
Yeah.
And so he was like, no. You come to Alaska, you're going to love it. It's going to take you back to your roots. I'm like, first of all, I don't want to be cold. Second of all, what's good about it? He goes, there's no electricity and no Wi-Fi.
I don't have those roots. I always had electricity.
No. Yeah. It's like, dude, all that is making it worse.
That's my grandparents'
roots. Like, that's their grandparents' roots. Yeah.
There's a middle ground for me. Like, I've got a little house, a little farmhouse. There's DirecTV, you know, and like, I go in there and I'll sit. But I mean, as far as like disconnecting from what is the norm of my life, which is not normal.
Sure.
You know, and I think that's what, you know, you certainly can agree with, is like when you're running and going, gunning and just going wide open, you don't have that time to really sit down and think about it. But when you do get removed from it, whether it be sitting around the house or some kind of break in the holidays, it is such a light switch of a lifestyle change.
When can you really appreciate the hard work that you've put in?
As much as I hate to say it, COVID was probably the best time I had for that. Just because when I signed the deal in 18, and it was kind of, I was on a major tours. I had number one songs, won an ACM award. You know, things were just real. And it's hard to really comprehend all that when you're in it. And you do get in that, just get through it. You know, like you, when I look at shows is not necessarily something I'm looking forward to as much as something I like, man, I want it to go well, you know.
And do you enjoy it afterward? That's how I find myself.
Look, when the show's over and, you know, a handful of buddies are there, whoever showed up are all on the bus and everybody's, man, it was good, wasn't it? That I enjoy, you know, and it's kind of a weird way to be about it because playing music is fun and I do enjoy that. So I think that when I do have those little breaks, I can kind of sit back and look at, you know, the things that are going on. It's funny you said that about feeling like because you're bored, things aren't going well. But that's just such a natural instinct because you are so busy when things are going well.
And because if you're like me, the early stages, nobody really wanted me to do anything. I was just begging for anything.
Yeah.
Like, please put me on this. And so by the time I was allowed to do things and then got to choose to do things, man, if I'm not working, I'm not being valued.
I think I was real fortunate, because I can imagine the stresses of that, especially in a town like this, you know, with the competition of it and trying to just grind every day and make relationships and get opportunities, is that I didn't have to deal with any of that. I was doing construction work and playing shows on the weekends, and I had no aspirations of being in country music industry. You know,
is it because you didn't know you could have aspirations?
Very much, yeah. I never would have thought it. And it's a little bit from, you know, I mean, I played a lot of shows for several years, cover shows, started writing a little bit, but I just saw so many people that were better than me. You know, the first time I ever played in Nashville, I think I came and played an open mic deal at Tootsie's on Broadway, and it was like 2 in the afternoon, and I played 2 songs, and there was a line of people. I remember some girl with a fiddle and guy with a banjo, like still waits with their instruments on. And they were all better than me. I listened to about 5 of them and left, and I was like, well, that was stupid. You know, I went back and played at the Mexican restaurant in Jacksonville for $150.
What would you tell, though, somebody that's going through that right now? Because obviously your perspective has completely changed, that you don't have to be better than – it's not a better than type thing.
Yeah, I mean, my advice is going to be from what I can say, and that's it. I'm never the guy that just like going to sing the national anthem and blow you away with my vocal range like Chris Stapleton or somebody. I've never had that. For me, what could set me apart from somebody else is the type of songs I could write, just because of the way I look at my life or how I grew up or whatever that is. So my advice has always been to just write as many songs as you can. Don't be critical of them, because a lot of the songs I've got that have gotten me where I am are not giant hit songs in the sense of a record label. You know, like I can think of several songs I've got that have gotten me to this point in my career that if I walked into any label in town and played them, they'd have went, what else you got? You know, and I don't know why it works. You know, it's just something that's unique to me that I write about. And I think that's what people can do to kind of set themselves apart, is just write a lot of songs.
What was home like for you? You mentioned your mom earlier, but what was home like growing up?
No wrestling. Yeah.
That's all I need to hear. We'll see you next week, everybody.
She'll be glad I brought that up. You know, she's probably proud of that. She's like, well, I didn't let him watch wrestling. It was great, man. I was really fortunate. Didn't realize it until, you know, around college.
Mom and dad both alive, both there?
Mom and dad both there. Both sets of my grandparents were alive the majority of my life. My granddad was the first one to pass in 2010. So I had 4 grandparents, a great-grandmother. My granny lived until 2020. She was 98. So all of my family right there, and like they all grew up, like both sets of my grandparents knew each other when they were kids, you know. And so it was just, I was really fortunate to have everybody within a few miles of where I grew up at. And when I wasn't playing ball, I was out running around with my grandparents. And I just had that relationship that I know a lot of people don't have.
How big was your school?
I don't know. What, graduated 120, 130, something like that.
So kind of middle?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Not small. I graduated like 50, right? That was small, but like 500 or some of the, you know, those are 1,000.
There were some bigger schools around us. We were Jacksonville, the city of Jacksonville, where there's Jacksonville State University, the college and all that. I kind of lived in, but my family's from a community called Pleasant Valley, which is right outside of town, which is like one flashing light, There's one store, it's called Green Store. E.O. Green runs a store out there, and the old men play dominoes in the morning. It's like, you know, kind of like going back in time. It hasn't changed since I was a kid.
And how did the transition happen of you being in a small town to you being here, and when you started to learn that is actually some the semi-tangible thing that you could do? Like, when did that start to get planted in your brain?
I said it was really, really gradual. I can remember one moment of I was playing at, you know, two or three different bar type restaurants around Northeast Alabama every week. I did that for a few years.
But working too?
Working, yeah. And I built houses until 2018, literally when I signed my deal. I came to town and started writing because my goal was I had built enough of a fan base off of writing songs. I thought I could get a publishing deal. Started getting some publishing deal offers. Then labels started coming to my shows. I had four record labels offer me a record deal, and I signed a publishing deal with Warren Chappell 1 week. I signed a record deal with Big Machine the next week and quit working and went on the road doing radio tours. So it was like that.
Did that feel really weird, though? Because
very.
As awesome as that would be, when your whole life you've grown accustomed and your knowledge is only in go to work hard, support. But now you're just in a creative, which I'm assuming nobody down there was doing anything creative.
I'd never co-written because, I mean, there was nobody around that I wrote songs with, you know. And, you know, so I did. There was nobody that knew anything about what was going on with me, and I didn't know what was going on. I was fortunate to meet some folks in town that kind of guide me in the right way. And I'll never forget, I was riding around with Eric Dillon, who wrote There Was This Girl with me. And I was really stressed out about figuring out what record label I was going to sign with, you know, knowing that's a big decision. I said, man, I can't wait till I get this figured out and I sign so I can go back and have a little time off. I've been in Nashville so much. And he's like, dude, you have no idea what a record deal is. You're about to go on the road on radio. And I mean, he was right, obviously, but it was just little moments like playing at Iron City in Birmingham. And, you know, the guy asked me to come down there and play. And I remember thinking it would be empty. You know, it was held like 1,200, 1,300 people. And we sold 1,260 tickets. And I didn't know anybody knew who I was in Birmingham. That was an hour and a half, hour from where I grew up at. And started going to Georgia and playing Atlanta and playing Athens and in South Georgia. And it just so I had a fan base for me putting music out that I didn't really know was there.
Were you putting it up on like DSPs?
So I was telling somebody yesterday, I don't remember if it was CD Baby was a avenue or TuneCore or something. And what I did was I just recorded it, and it was all awful recordings. You know, I mean, like the production. I play guitar on a lot of it. It was just like an engineer in studio. And I looked up where I was a big fan of Drake White, and I was a big fan of Jason Isbell. And I looked up where they recorded at. It was Fame Studios in Muscle Shoals, which was about 2 hours from me. So I drove there. I talked to the guy at the front desk, and he was like, "Yeah." And he went and twisted some knobs, and I played it. And he said, "How's that?" I was like, "I guess it's good." You know, I mean, it was awful, but I just put it out on whatever those platforms were. And eventually, I started looking in TuneCore. There'd be some checks in there, and then I knew I was going to be rich. Like I was just looking. I was like, $1,200 or something in TuneCore once a month, you know. So it was a cool thing, but it wasn't like there was any a song on the radio was the furthest thing from my mind.
Was there a local anything that started to play a song first, like a local weekend show, or was it you had to come to Nashville and then finally it got put back onto the home stuff?
I mean, it wouldn't be a syndicated show, like a 95.5, I think, WHMA.
Yeah, like even a small station.
There was a guy with there, Tex Carter, used to kind of play some stuff for me, but I was doing big shows in a small part of the world. You know, like I had a festival that I put on called the Back 40 Bash that I thought we'd get a couple hundred people to show up to, and we had 1,200 at the first one. It was on my property. We built a stage, and
you did it at your place.
Absolute insanity. Yeah, Josh, tell you too.
Did you have insurance on the thing?
Oh, I think I had like $50 insurance from like my guy that does my car insurance. But I had one buddy of mine that was a county sheriff working security, and we let people bring their own coolers, and it was moonshine. And like everybody there got in a fight. I got in a fight. Everybody fought. And my mom was taking up ticket money on one end, my dad on the other. I'll never forget, it was real dry. I went to my dad, and he was just like, when he blinked, dust fell off of his eyelashes. He was so coated in it. But he pulled out all this big water. He's like, dude, look at this, man. We're going to be rich, you know. I think we made like $20,000 or something, you know, at this festival. So we did it a couple more years, and my Uncle Ty, whose property it was at the time, would say every year, he's like, oh, I hope y'all had a good time. We're never doing this again. You know, it was like just a nightmare. And then I'd give him a couple thousand. We'll try it one more time, you know. But because of that, I had a relationship with those local stations, and they would kind of try to help me out, you know.
Hang tight. The Bobby Cast will be right back.
Wow.
And we're back on the Bobbycast.
Who gave you your first guitar?
My granddaddy Buford. It was an old Epiphone guitar. Nothing real nice. I wrote a song about him that I played at his funeral. And there was a line in that song that somebody asked me about, and I couldn't remember what I was thinking when I wrote it, but it was that he never could himself, but he taught me how to play. And it was kind of weird because I don't remember what I was thinking when I wrote that. I was, 16, 17 years old, but he just enjoyed the guitar. So we started going and sitting on the porch of my great-grandparents' house, who were no longer living, and he'd get the Yellow Pages and call up so-and-so.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or you like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com.
T-E-C-O-V-A-S. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, that's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
They used to play the banjo or the mandolin or whatever. And so next thing you know, it's me and all these old guys out there playing guitar, and started a little deal called the Golden Saw Music Hall in my great-grandparents' house. And we did that every Friday for about 14 years. And I would just sit on the stage with these old guys and like watch how they made chords play. So that was kind of how I started playing music. But even with that kind of background, I didn't think it was going anywhere. You know, it was just like my granddaddy Lyndon liked to fish and golf. That's what we did when I was with him. My granddaddy Buford liked country music. So when I was around him, that's what we did.
The guys that you were playing with, the old guys from around town, were they generous with their time to show you things, or were you just learning through being around it?
Oh, very, man. There's a, you know how small towns are like that, and those type of communities, man, everybody kind of is just close, and they all pulled for me because I was the kid up there. I mean, and I was, 12, 13 years old singing like Great Speckled Bird by Roy Acuff. Like, I mean, stuff that was, seemingly 100 years before my time. And they were very helpful, and they'd come over there during the week and we'd sit around and play, and I learned a lot from those guys. And I wasn't very good, but I got a lot of false confidence from the fact that everybody would cheer when I got up there because I was a kid, amongst a bunch of old guys. So it was a cool thing. Another thing that I kind of took for granted, didn't realize how unique it was until kind of after.
What do you think motivated you to continue? Because that 13, 14, 15-year-old part of life, we're just kind of all over.
Yeah.
But why, who did you want to do it for? Was it for your grandfather? Because you felt like he brought you in? Or was it, did the guitar just like grab you? Songwriting just grab you?
So all through high school, nothing really came from it. I played three sports and guitar was just, like I said, something I did with my granddaddy on the side.
People at school did not know you were a musician? It wasn't something that you...
I didn't play at talent shows or anything. I mean, sure. I was like quarterback of the football team, so that wasn't what I was known for doing. And I went to Jacksonville State, walked on, played a little bit of football there. While I was in college, I played lead guitar in a band called Southern Harmony. And we would just play like frat gigs that one of the guys that was the lead singer was in that fraternity. So we just kind of grandfathered into play. We're not very good. And from that, I guess I started to sing a little bit and then started to play my own acoustic shows. And there was a time in there, probably 22 to 24, 25, where it got really monotonous to me. I was playing the same shows every week, the same places, seeing the same folks. We were having a good time, you know, making $100 a night, getting a free bar tab. That was when it clicked for me, was when I started writing songs. I got tired of playing the same songs all the time, so I started writing some and trying to replace songs in my set that did well with something that I came up with. And that was a turning point for me, was when people would go, "And play that one you played last week that you wrote." You know, and then eventually I went and recorded some of those songs, and that was, you know, that was where it became more enjoyable to me. The songwriting part of it's always been the thing that was the most fun. And I think the most motivating thing, because to make somebody feel some kind of emotion from something you came up with, I think is what any songwriter enjoys.
The juxtaposition of you being an athlete, a guy from the country, a guy from the South, then you're also singing. You know, I mean, if you weren't big, maybe they punch you in the shoulder a little more.
Yeah, yeah. I certainly, my mom, I can remember when I was like sixth grade, made me be in the choir at Kitty Stone Singers, is what it was called. Kitty Stone was my elementary school, because she was going to pay for me to play soccer. We didn't have peewee football, so I played baseball, basketball, and soccer. And she said, "You can play, but you got to be in Kitty Stone Singers." And that was the most painful thing I've ever done. It was just me and a bunch of girls up there, and I'm like trying to, you know. And I even went to one voice lesson at Jacksonville State. A guy up there, it was very, my mom was like set it up for me, and it was very like walked in the back door, you know. I mean, I'm playing quarterback at Jacksonville State going to voice lessons, you know. I walked in, and the guy's like, "All right, give me a I don't know what you call it, like a fa-la-la-la-la." And I was like, "I can't do this." I just left. Like,
nah. That was it?
Yeah, not going to happen.
So you learned how to sing just by singing?
Yeah. Yeah. My oldest sister, Lindy, is a very talented singer.
Does she do it?
She does. She went to LaGrange, Georgia on a music scholarship.
Oh, wow.
Was in several, like, plays, very, you know, artsy, whatever you want to call that. But I'd never had any type of, I'm sure I don't sing right now, you know, like as far as how you're supposed to do it. But I guess maybe I got by without getting beat up because of what I was singing about, you know. I didn't sing a lot of fluffy songs. It was a lot of, you know, Hank Williams type stuff and Merle Haggard. So I guess I got away with it because of that.
What was your mom like, just in general?
She was tough, man. She used to just wear me out. I mean, I needed it. I was a lot more trouble before I was old enough to get in trouble, if that makes sense. I think when I was a teenager, I was a lot more just whatever I could get into. And she always used to say, when I made it to 22, her job was done. Like, I'm alive. And one thing that was cool about my family with the music thing was nobody ever thought I would be where I'm at or anywhere near where I'm at, but everybody was very supportive of when I was doing it. You know, I mean, that I don't know that they missed a show when I played in town. And some of them I probably wish they wouldn't have been at, because we used to get a little rowdy, you know, playing in the hometown bars. But they still come out to all the shows or anything that's close. And, you know, it's a pretty crazy thing to have as a goal or a dream, is to make it in country music. So for them to be as supportive as they were was very fortunate.
You have brothers and sisters? I know you have a sister. Do you have others?
I got two sisters. Casey is 2 years older than me. She's got two little kids. And Lindy's was the singer. She's 3 years older than me. She's 10 years older than me. She's got three kids.
So you're the youngest.
Yeah.
And the only boy.
That's right.
Was your dad a big guy?
Yeah, he's 6'3".
When did you grow?
I had like one of those 3-inch ninth grade summers. I was probably one of the shorter guys in my grade. And then sprouted, and then it took me about a year to get my coordination back, you know, playing ball with big hands and feet, being long and everything. And I could never put any weight on. I was always real thin, but yeah, I kind of had a growth spurt around ninth grade.
So 10th grade, did you get to play on the senior high team as a 10th grader?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Did you start?
Yeah.
At
yeah,
quarterback?
I started quarterback in 11th grade. Yeah.
What did you play in 10th grade, like wide receiver?
I think I played a little bit of everything. Safety, outside linebacker, probably backup quarterback. And I think I ended up playing both ways my senior year, too. We had a tough time in football. We had a great basketball, great baseball program, but we got knocked around a little bit in football.
How many people, our football team, and we had to play, a lot of guys played both ways. I didn't play much both ways. I hated hitting. I catch a ball. I did not want to get hit today, so don't hit me, please. But we had like 38 players total, right? So you're talking 22.
Yeah.
And then some special teams.
What were y'all's?
Double A.
Double A, okay. Yeah. We were 4A.
And you played both ways?
Yeah, well, so I had three different head coaches. My 10th, 11th, and 12th career year, we had coach changes. And the last one that came in was like a Paul Bear Bryant-esque, old school, ran the wishbone triple option.
Yeah.
Which, if you're a quarterback, you understand, you get hit every play. Whether you have the ball or not, you fake to have the ball. So
you ran triple option your senior year?
Yes.
So you were just getting pounded.
Oh, it was, yeah. And we didn't have the best offensive line. I'm glad Josh is here. He can be like this in the background. But it was tough for me because when I got to college, I had to almost like relearn how to read a secondary. Because, I mean, we threw two or three times a game and it was a touchdown because everybody was in the box. But it was a pretty unique experience having all that going on I think he was pretty tough on us. He ran everybody. I think we had 22 players senior year. I know that when somebody got hurt, we didn't have enough to scrimmage.
No way.
Coaches had to stand in on defense. It was wild.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. So if you're running the triple option or you're running any sort of that's not a pro style or even, you know, shotgun spread formation, and you're going to college where that's all they run, pro style,
yeah.
Again, you're having to completely learn.
It was tough.
So, and you walked on. Did you have any scholarship offers at all?
No, I actually had talked to more schools about baseball.
Just because a quarterback, unless you're going to go play at Navy.
Yeah, unless Georgia Tech did it for a little while, but there's not much calling for an option.
That's right. So you could have been great, but if you're running the option the whole time, what coach is going to be like, hey, man, we've been watching your tape.
Yeah, I wasn't really built for it. I mean, I was more like a tall, skinny, like I would think stand in the pocket and pass. But, at the end of the day, I don't think I was going to make it to the Cowboys. So it's not a huge letdown, but it was tough to try to relearn that going into college at the old wishbone.
Why did you go play college football, walk on?
That was my favorite sport. I mean, and that was Jacksonville State University was my hometown college. You know, just that was kind of a dream come true to even go try it. And even to this day, like relationships I made, guys I played with, probably more than anything, the accountability of being 18 years old and having to get up for a 5:30 workout. You know, people not making you go to class. But like that was irreplaceable for me because I was not anywhere near ready to join the job force at that time.
You know? How many years did you play ball?
Two and a half.
And what's the most significant playing time you got in college?
Well, it was 2008. I was a starter, and we signed the former national championship quarterback from LSU, Ryan Perilou. Mm.
Highly recruited dude.
Yeah.
Who transferred.
I remember being at 7-on-7, and Coach Luke Pruitt called me in the office and they said they signed Ryan Perilou. And I said, I'll clean out my locker.
Yeah, that sucks. Did you enjoy it? Were you sad when it was over? Was that your identity to yourself?
Man, I always did so much stuff. I mean, I guess by the time I got done playing ball, I was playing in bars a little bit. I'd always done construction work. You know, My grandparents were always very supportive of sports, watched every game and everything, but it wasn't like that's what made me. By any means, you know, I felt like I had other places I could go, and I kind of knew that was going to end at some point. So it wasn't an awful thing for me to go through, and it really led into me going to work. I think my last semester of college, my dad had back surgery, and him and his brother framed houses together. I left school and went and helped my uncle build houses, and I was like, man, I'm going to be rich doing this. I'm going to make, you know, a couple hundred dollars a night, and I'm playing on the weekends and make $500-$600 a week framing houses, and I got it made. So
I bet you made less money when you got a record deal for a while than...
I hate to think about it, especially when the IRS found out who I was. I'm sure then it was really bad.
Because you're making money daily. I roofed houses for a while, and a lot of that money you just make, it's not...
Yeah.
I'll just be quiet.
Well, you see it. That's the thing.
Yes. But also, like, you're working and you're getting paid. When you're doing radio tour,
Spending money.
Yeah. You're not getting paid?
Well, I can remember, because I didn't have a booking agent, and I was playing, 100, 120 shows a year up until I signed the deal. I didn't have a manager, nothing. So I was, it was just word of mouth. I had a little business card with my phone number on it. I just give to people, and bars would call me or owners or whatever, promoters. And so people would call and ask me about playing a private show, and that was a tough thing for me because I hated to be like $10,000. That's a bunch of money. I was working during the week for $500 a week. Right. But, at like weddings and stuff, like they had a pretty big budget. So it was always a weird thing for me. Somebody would call and I'd go, $5,000. I remember sitting with Red Akins one time writing and going, man, how much money would you have to turn down $15,000 to go play acoustic for 5 minutes? I don't know that I'll ever have that much money. I mean, that's still a bunch of money. And I remember when I got with a manager and a booking agent and all that stuff, and then people would call out a private show and we'd have to turn something down. I'm like, man, I'll go do it for $8,000. What are you talking about? And then you realize when you got a bus and you got this and you got that, it cost me whatever to go play a show. I would hate to know what it costs now. We got 4 buses and 2 18-wheelers and lighting boards and camera guys and everything else. So we're very blessed, and it's an awesome way to make a living, but it's a very expensive way to make a living.
The Bobby Cast. We'll be right back. This is the Bobby Cast.
I want to talk about work ethic for a second, and I'm going to mention Sam Hunt for a second. We went to Western Kentucky to do a sports thing, and we were hanging out with the head coach at Western Kentucky, who is Sam's quarterback coach.
Okay.
And
UAB.
Yeah. And so he was like, yeah, I used to coach Sam at UAB, and he's now the head coach there now. And he's like, how's Sam doing? And I was like, what was Sam? This was not even on a microphone. I was like, what was Sam like? And he was like, kind of like he probably is now, like quiet, dedicated, was going to show up on time and get the job done. If I were to ask your coach from back then, today, if I were to see him, like what kind of work ethic did Riley have?
I don't know. I think that I was always very mind.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah, that's what the whole store basically is, fresh leather,
yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
Tecovas.com.
Tecovas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as The Boar's Nest, Sue's Place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, that's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
Thankful that I wasn't the best. So I think maybe because of that, I tried to outwork people in some ways. I think that that definitely carried over into my music career, is being very mindful that there were things that I wasn't as good as other people at. But I had a lot in my head about what other people thought, being like my dad or my grandparents or whoever that was coming to my games. And growing up in a small town, I always say you're very much held accountable for how you do anything, how you treat people, how you drive down the street. You know, if you cut off somebody's grandmother, you're going to see their aunt in Winn-Dixie, and they're going to, you know, so like that to me, the small town made me want to be a hard worker in sports and in writing music and, you know, building houses for a living. That's how you get work, is reputation. You know, I think that that's where I got a lot of that.
Do you get any sort of flack for, how old are you now? 35, 36?
Yeah.
I got married a couple years ago, but I was 39 when I got married, and everybody back home was like, you're broken or gay because you're not married. Because everybody where I was from was, you got married at 19, 20. I mean, not you.
Oh, like, yeah. No, I mean, everybody, my parents and, yeah.
They were convinced to think that I was off, like, intellectually, or that I just, they were like, it's okay if you're gay. I'm like, I'm not gay. And if I was, I would tell you. But
I've been called a lot of things, but.
But it's like, I was 39 and you're 35.
Yeah, I think that now it's probably, at least everybody that knows me personally has seen what my lifestyle's like in the sense of how much I'm gone. I mean, I don't have regular relationships with my friends.
But what about at home? Are they like, Riley, why are you not married? Because at home, they don't see probably what your travel life. My mom didn't see what my travel life was like.
Yeah, my mom has my calendar.
She does.
My mom has been really great about that. Is like, maybe early on, I'm sure she had a little bit of that and was worried about me, you know, finding somebody or whatever. But now I think she just knows that this is such a timely point in my career. I've obviously been very blessed and have accomplished things I never thought I would, but there's also a lot of opportunity that comes with that. And I just kind of had in my head when I was going to sign a record deal to just put my nose down and grind it out and do everything they asked me to do, anything I could for a couple of years, which that's stretched into 5 now. But I think they get that, and I don't see a lot of pressure. I think that my lifestyle is going to have to change to where I go from playing, you know, 120 shows a year to 60.
But what's going to make that happen, though? What's a factor?
That's a great question, because because it's, you know, as you well know, it's up to me.
Yep.
I mean, I could turn down anything I want to. I don't know. I hope it's just something clicks and we get to a place where I can say, this is the budget for the year. This is how many shows we can go do, and I'm happy with making this much, and this is the career I'm going to have from this. And maybe that's from, you know, a lot of opportunities not being available that are right now. I don't know. It's probably one of the more scary things about it is knowing that with this type of travel schedule and lifestyle, I don't really have much chance of meeting somebody, and how much things are going to have to slow down for me to get to that place. You know,
it's also a momentum-based industry.
Very much. It's such a battle to stay relevant.
Right.
Probably now more than ever because of all the avenues of new music and a new artist discovery or whatever that is.
So it feels like if you let up by letting something else in, regardless of what it is, yeah. If it's you want to go away for 3 months to hunt, or if you want to have a serious relationship, like you're like, well, if I dedicate, this is the struggle that I went through. If I dedicate my time to this, then this is going to suffer. And so I was never going to get married. I was just like, you know what? I'm never going to have time for it because I feel like I have a huge imposter syndrome. And like, if I don't keep going, I'm never going to get back to this level. And then I met my wife and it was like, she kind of bossed me out of it. And for the first time ever, I let her because I was happy that I met a person that, as much as I was annoyed by it, I was more annoyed by the fact that maybe she wouldn't be there. And it was the only time. And I'd dated, but I mean, it was, you know, I had my moved to Nashville. Holy crap. I never got girls. And I got all the girls at once. It was wild. And then it was, but this is weird. And then I was like, I'm never getting married. Who cares? And then I met my wife and I was like, man, I really don't want to slow down. But worse than that, I don't want to like lose her. That's whomever. I don't even know you've never been married, right? Never been married.
No.
At all or anything. You're not going to ever go, I only want to make this much money this year.
Yeah. It's a really funny thing to say probably to my buddies back home from the outside looking in because they're like, oh man, Riley meets someone. But where do you really meet a girl at? You know what I mean?
Where do you get to invest time in a human?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, social media is probably, whereas some people would use that to meet people, it's the opposite for me. Because how do you really use that, you know, with what I do for a living? So it's an interesting thing. I
used it, but it wasn't for good, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, I used it, but it wasn't.
Not for meeting somebody to marry. I'll
right.
Say that,
it wasn't like long-term investment.
The girls I've met on Instagram probably watch wrestling.
And
their mom probably let them watch wrestling, so it would never work. Or they were wrestlers. I've had a couple of years where we've said, man, let's take off November and let me, you know, go hunt, just kind of disconnect and write whatever, and we've never taken one off. So it'll be that. I think that I've guaranteed myself a career that's more than I've ever thought I would have. But at the same time, there's just so much opportunity. And I think the only thing that makes me nervous about my career is not making the absolute most of it, you know, not getting every opportunity that I can. And
but you're never going to get every opportunity. You're never going to be able to get to every opportunity. I don't know if you go to therapy at all, but. God dang.
I thought that's what this was.
I know. It's probably what this is.
Pool house like, therapy, man. I thought that's what we were doing.
We go to a couples counselor and I go to my own. And he was like, because I would say that, and I'm a little older than you. So I would be like, if I don't take advantage of everything, and he's like, you'll never be able to take advantage of everything.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You're running on a hamster wheel that you can never get to go fast enough to actually matter.
I think that it's a little bit of a overthinking type thing. I will say I'm mindful that there's nothing that I feel like I'm going to miss, if that makes sense. Like, if my career panned out right now and it is what it is, I can go play shows for the next 15 years, I would still be very excited about that. So it's not like I'm going to be leaving something on the table. I just know there's opportunity right now, and it's almost like, I'm sure you were the same way, when I'm sitting around, I'm thinking, man, what could I be doing?
You ever feel guilty for doing nothing?
That's pretty tough to explain to a girl, let's say you've gone on a couple of dates with, and she wants to know why you have a day off and you want to go write, or you want to go do this or that, you know. And for me, it was hunting. That was a really hard thing to explain. Like, why would you want to go sit in the woods by yourself after being on the road for 80 days this year? And I haven't found the answer to that.
You'll get kicked in the nuts by a girl, and she won't care that much about you, and it'll like maybe two kicks in the nuts, and then it'll be over.
So my grandmother, Lil Jean, tells me all the time.
She says, I'll meet
a girl that will care less than me. I haven't yet.
And I never believed it. I was like, this is old wives' tale. If you stop trying, then you'll find it. And I was like, that's whatever. I'm just never going to get married. I'm going to work. I'm going to be king dingling at work.
Yeah.
And it happened. And I still am like, really? So that's what it'll be. And now I'm going to laugh, too. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, well, I mean, to your point, I think maybe if you met somebody in your early 20s or me, I wouldn't be where I am. So
absolutely. If I'd have knocked up some chick at 23 years old, yeah. Some random, and trust me, nobody would have sex with me anyway, so it didn't happen, like twice. But, and I don't mean almost knocking someone up, I mean anybody having sex with me. But
yeah.
It'd all been different. Everything would have all been different.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I was a complete loser. You don't have to agree with that because you weren't. That's okay. You're cool.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or you like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
TECOVAS.com.
TECOVAS.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk Wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, that's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
You're big, you're an athlete. You play guitar with your grandpa. That's cool.
Well, I don't have any kids.
I don't either.
So that's what I'm saying.
But I'm going through.
We can agree there.
I'm going through the kids thing now that you're going through with the relationship part, where it's like I don't. With kids, I'm like, if I have a kid, I can't. I got to get off the road. I can't go shoot my sports show. I can't go. But it's the same cycle over and over again.
Yeah, a kid's thing, which is probably a backwards way to think about it, because you should probably look at the girl the same way as the kid. But I wouldn't want to have a kid right now. I mean, not that I don't want children. It's just that I know how gone I'm going to have to, how absent I would have to be. And I would want a kid to be able to have a somewhat normal.
Never going to happen,
like, you know,
with you.
Yeah.
But what's normal? There's no normal. You're normal. You're normal, what you just talked about. Like, I know people that grew up in, like, big cities. They would think that, like, that's like a zoo. Like, they would look at you as, like, somebody in a zoo because they've never seen that kind of life before.
Yeah.
So there is no normal.
Yeah. Well, but, this is a lot faster paced, and something about how I grew up that was a lot slower in that town. I think there's values there that I think a kid's going to get, you know. And that was from spending a lot of time with my grandparents. It was from the accountability, like I said, of being in a small town. And I don't know. There's a lot of artists that I think have managed to have a great career and still have that home lifestyle, you know, and spend a lot of time at home. And Jackson will be in 3 hours from Nashville. You know, I think it's doable. It's just going to take, you know, I keep saying a couple of years.
I said that too. Wait another year. Wait another 2 years. It was never a year thing. Or it was like, wait till
this
I have this.
This is the opposite of counseling. This made me feel like more nervous about it.
No, it's like I lived anxiously forever. I was like, wait till I get this much money in the bank. And it just mostly had to be the person.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. It didn't matter, you know, this much money, this much. But it was the person. And then I fought it. And I was like, nope, can't do it. But then I was just more upset not being with her than I was if I would have not been able to work as much. And it's hard. It sucks sometimes because I want to work all the time. I still have that desire not to work for fun, to work to, like, prove to others that I'm worthy to be here.
Well, I can comprehend that too, because I don't have another hobby that would compete with work right now for me. Like, I like to be on the farm and you know, ride around the tractor and you know, clean up some of the property. That's kind of my, like, project when I'm there. But I'm not, like, longing for that all the time. It's just something that occupies some of my thoughts. So, you know, that and hunting for me is really it. So I can see where a girl would take that place a little bit and make it where you wouldn't mind being off the road so much.
It'll be there. I'll laugh too. I'm gonna get a good laugh at that when you find her and you're like, God dang it.
You're probably, like, ordained or something, aren't you? I can just let you.
I was at one point. I don't know if my license is still good, but I got ordained years ago. It's internet.
It's probably like mail in Alabama.
Yeah, I'm not yet. did you almost not record Grandpa's Never Die? Well, like, what's the story? One of my friends said that he had heard you maybe tell a story somewhere where you almost didn't record it.
Well, what it was we had my second single was a song called In Love By Now. We went and filmed a music video for it in Belize. You know, had this big rollout. It went to radio. And you know, it was maybe in the 40s, and I wrote "I Wish Grandpa's Never Died," obviously after my granddad Lyndon passed away. And I think I got a little drunk. I was down in Georgia, maybe Macon or somewhere, playing a show, and I played it. And that video was the one that somebody on their phone videoed it and got a couple million views in like a week. And it was it was just the reaction, like, to every line in that song. For the first time people hear it, you know, and you know that's a unique thing. So I went and played the West Virginia State Fair about 2 weeks later. I'd never played in West Virginia. And there's a video of this on my Instagram, but they screamed every word. And it was off of a video where they learned it. It wasn't recorded or anything. So I called labels. I mean, we got to cut this. I don't know if it's a radio single or what, but it's, and of course, you know, it became, took the place of that single and became probably my biggest song. So I don't know that I ever, I certainly wasn't thinking about recording it when I wrote it, but it raised its hand from the first time I played it, you know, and kind of can't really argue with that.
Well, that's going to be wild that you don't record a song, but you're playing it and people know it, that they're watching some recorded video with not the greatest audio of you just
open air. And to be honest with you, I watched that video so many times to try to figure out what about it. Because, I mean, I knew the song made me feel some type of emotion. I can comprehend how it could make somebody else feel something. But I couldn't figure out why somebody would watch that video over and over again. You know, like for me, if I'm scrolling through Instagram and something comes on, I'll turn it off. Like I can't, you know, it just was horrible quality. And but at the same time, a lot of the songs I recorded early on were not very good production. And I think that the, you know, the story or the lyric or whatever that emotion people are getting from it is they kind of overlook a lot of stuff. And that was the first time I'd ever seen that with a song. It was pretty cool to watch.
What's a Duckman Jam? Like what's the difference in that than the one you used to have at your house?
Duckman Jam will be a lot more organized. I'm very certain. Duckman, well, obviously my Instagram name was Riley Duckman. I think from Duck Hunt, that kind of became a little bit of my, nickname or whatever you want to call it. And grew up going to the floor of Bama, watching a lot of artists down there. I'm sure you've been down there at some point.
Yeah.
Learned a lot about kind of trying to win over a touristy crowd, you know, from watching people play down there and playing
shows.
That
doesn't want to really be won over.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I think those were the most helpful and beneficial shows for me in my career was those acoustic shows. You play for 4 hours. You take 4 15-minute breaks. And you get one drink per break. And I think we made $100. And I played every day for 3 weeks 1 year during just every college spring break from 12 to 4 on the beach under a little tent. And just gotten to be really good buddies with the owner down there and some of the guys that run that place. And we've done the wharf, but I just really wanted to go do something on the beach in front of the floor of Bama. The last show we played before COVID shut us down was on the beach. So we're going to go do two nights. It's April 12th and 13th, I think.
It is.
Tracy Lawrence, Ella Langley, Jake Worthington, Drake White, and do, you know, 10,000 people on the beach, two nights in a row. It's be a good time.
That's going to be awesome.
Let's take a quick pause for a message from our sponsor. Welcome back to the Bobbycast.
You and Luke, you know, Luke hopped on a different round here, but that song was recorded by you. I know we've talked about this a bit on the show, on the radio show, but so you have that song, you record the song, and then you go back and ask Luke to come on it, right? Is that how it happened? Like, hey, I'm going to put this out, will you hop on it?
It's probably supposed to be done through the proper channels and management and everything else, but I just texted Luke. We were really talking about what the next single is going to be, and that song has always raised its hand to me. It's a hit song at my shows. It always has been. And I just kind of mentioned the label, like, maybe we go back to this one. You know, obviously, Grandpa's shook up what was my next single and this and that. So I just texted Luke, said, do you have any interest in being on this song? Obviously, I'm buddies with Luke, have been for a while. But I also kind of knew that me being on a stadium tour with him would probably be a great end for that to be something they would be motivated to do, you know, knowing that we're all trying to sell tickets to the same tour. And my success was somewhat his success at that time. And I mean, you know, I hope he enjoyed the song. I don't think he would have done it otherwise. It was definitely very beneficial for me to have him on it and gave that song a second life and came up my third number one. So
they just send you the track when he was done with it?
So the first time? Yeah, I've done several features. You know, I did Half Me with Thomas Rhett. That we sang together that day. I did a song with Justin Moore. We sang on the same microphone, which, you know, was like, I think we were standing on a chair, maybe, you know. But I've done some where we just sent, you know, and the song with Jelly Roll, you know, he's so busy right now. It's for us to get together was tough. But, yeah, I just sent it to Luke, and he sent it back with.
Yeah, my question is, the first time you heard it, was it awesome?
Oh, it was awesome. Man. Well, I mean, especially from a songwriter standpoint, probably like every songwriter in town, I've never had an outside cut. You know, I've written all my own songs, but to hear somebody like that, especially somebody you're a fan of and somebody with that kind of vocals, sing a song that you wrote, you know, and better than me by far, you know, so it was really cool to hear that. And definitely was exactly what that song needed.
I want to ask you one more thing about the Buford Bond Fund. Mm-hmm. What does that do? I know it's military, it's your grandpa too, right? Like, why was this important to you to create that?
Well, I've done a lot of – I've been fortunate in my career. I've been able to do a lot of things with St. Jude and you know, the military has obviously been a huge part of my life with both my granddaddy serving, but also just, you know, how I write songs, what I write about, and what I feel like is important to spend my time doing. And what was great about having my own foundation is I can kind of steer it in any direction I want to throughout the year. So if something comes up, you know, with some stuff with Habitat for Humanity, which is great for me because, you know, being a home builder, it was awesome to go outside of Nashville and my dad and aunt and uncle, mom come up. They all got hard hats on and tool belts and we're out there working. And it's just been cool to me to be able to see some of the ways that you can use, you know, what's a pretty awesome way to be able to make a living to help.
Yeah.
Other organizations. So I like the freedom that the Buford Bonds Foundation allows me to be able to kind of go in any direction that's kind of on my heart at that time.
You have the next single. Is it ready?
Damn Good Day to Leave. Yep.
Is that out? I mean, do people know that?
Yeah, they know it now.
Yeah.
Man, what's cool about it is now they know. Eric Dillon, who wrote There Was This Girl With Me, right. And that was his first number one. He's also on this song with me and a kid that I signed to a Pups and Deal named Nick Walsh, who I'm a huge fan of. I got to tell them that they were getting a single to the radio, and it'd be Nick's first and Eric's awesome. Second. So that was cool, man. That's a different side of this business that I wasn't really aware of.
You guys can follow Riley at Riley Duckman or Duckman.
Duckman, Mr. Yeah. Duckman.
Riley Duckman, which I thought for a while that was your name, Riley Duckman.
I don't know who I told the story to, but they call me Duckman every time I see him. I pulled up at the Opry one time and a valet guy came out, opened the door and said, "Oh, are you Mr. Duckman?" I guess I was.
You are, yeah. You worked me for a bit too, yeah. Yeah. Good to see you, man. Appreciate the time.
Appreciate
it. Congratulations on all the success, and you know, you'll be hearing from me.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk. I'll have a lot of.
No, you'll be hearing from me when you get kicked in the nuts. I'll be like, I told you that's what I was going to take.
I'll call you.
Yeah, you'll be hearing from me. All right, there he is, Riley Duckman. Riley, Mr. Duckman. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to a Bobbycast production.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit Tecovas.com. Tecovas.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.